The salesperson slash account manager should respect the client's position, right? In other words, you can be pushy, you can be badgering. You need to quickly make a call. Hey, will this take 3 months or will it take 5 months? And then use your experience and intuition to then say, all right, I'm in it. I'm going to be in it for 3 months. And then after that, stick to that and don't crowd the client, because crowding is the worst thing that can happen.
Today, I'm incredibly excited to introduce our guest, Sudeep Bangalore, Chief Technology Officer for Global Operations at Stanley Black & Decker, which, as you know, is not only one of the most admired manufacturing companies in the world, but is also one of the most innovative and socially sensitive companies globally. It is a huge honor to have Sudeep on the spot. But before we start, let me apologize in advance for the slight disturbance in my line while recording the episode. Sudeep's connection was perfect. Without further ado, let's get started. It is a real honor to have you on the pod, Sudeep. Thanks for joining.
It's a pleasure, Diya.
So let's get started. As I was telling you, Sudeep, before we started recording, this podcast is for people selling into enterprises who can benefit a lot, in my opinion, from your experience of interacting with sales organizations across your career. So looking forward to hearing your opinion and your experiences on those lines. So to get this started, if you could tell us a little bit about your journey so far, Sudeep, walk us through the whole thing, connect the dots for us, if you may, please.
Yeah, not to go way back. Let's just say that I started out putting systems together, hands-on work, systems integration, mostly on the factory floor and beyond. So that's where my passion comes, is stitching things together and being able to demonstrate something exciting and something impactful for larger clients, especially. Most of my life, I've engaged with larger clients, not small to medium business, even though that's a passion for me lately. So yeah, that's how I got started. And over the years, then I essentially gravitated towards commercialization of new technologies with a heavy focus on around applied innovation, if you will, or applied research, as it used to be called before. And so over the years, that's sort of been my sweet spot, which is to really identify nascent opportunities to apply technology to things that support large manufacturing and supply chain organizations. So that's what I have done over the years across the globe. And just to go back about a decade, I met you there, Zia, at Wipro, where I actually bootstrapped a new service offering and a practice around that called smart manufacturing. So I do understand the other side of trying to do an enterprise sale, even though we didn't have a software platform. So that was a fantastic experience. I learned a lot, and hopefully that experience has been useful for others in terms of how you actually create a technology suite that makes sense in the manufacturing industry. And now, over the last 4 years at Stanley Black & Decker, I've had the privilege and the awesome luxury of now bringing all of those experiences, starting from systems integration all the way to creating brand new technology, then apply all of that experience across all of Stanley Black & Decker. And what's been neat is it's not just our solutions that we've created within Stanley Black & Decker that's helping us move forward, but it's also about partners, both small and big startups and large established companies that have helped us in that journey. But long story short, where we are right now, where I am right now, is to really that perfect juncture where we spot and talent, whether it comes from just individuals or startup companies or larger companies, and then we assemble it the right way and see how we can apply it across our vibrant 145 factories plus about 10 or 12 DCs, broadly speaking, and create impact and impact the people as well, not just the bottom line and top line impact, but the people. So that's rather the long-winded answer to your simple question.
Well, fantastic. And correct me if I'm wrong, Sudeep, but I feel you're probably one of the most luckiest guys alive, right? Your passion is your work, right? And you're getting an opportunity to make it real.
Indeed. I couldn't have said it better. So luxury was the word I used. Luxury and, more important, being able to enjoy pretty much every day of what I love doing is exactly where I am right now.
Great. In your current role, Sudhi, if I could ask this, what kind of product or services that do you buy from outside and also influence for the rest of the company in your current role?
That's a good question. So let me parse that out. So there's some technology I buy directly with my team, obviously, and that typically, if I were to partition that, it is sometimes a platform, and then the most generic being obviously something like an IoT platform. But then lately, it's actually platforms that support a very pointy cause, whether it's edge analytics, for example, or it is a workflow management solution, and also some of the other services related to how you can do data integration, data management, and data mapping, all of those services, right? So those are the ones I directly buy. And then there are others that I influence the IT organization to buy, okay? And those are obviously, you know, services that are at the cloud level, seeing what kind of an impact it would have moving from one cloud platform to the other, because one might suit the manufacturing portfolio better as opposed to the business environment. So that would be a second category, and including maybe security is a second one. And the third one could be the third category. It escaped me right now, but it'll come back. So yeah, so it really, there's some aspects that I work with our CIO and the others where we make a decision directly.
Great. Thanks for sharing that, Sudhi. So Sudhi, since the time that we have been working together, I was always impressed with your ability to have look at the big picture and look at the future vision, but at the same time, you know, connect it back to reality and execute on that, right? Not many people can do that. So with that in the background, if you could share your, you know, where do you think the manufacturing as a whole is heading, the future of manufacturing? And the reason I'm asking that is I also want to, how should your partners, vendors, or, you know, other partners that you work with need to align with that vision, especially the people that are selling to you?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. So I'll tell you, somebody asked me this question in one of the other meetings or seminars, I don't remember. So here's the thing. If you look at the two bookends of the scenario here with platform providers and unique niche providers in our space in manufacturing, there's a certain level of innovation that's exciting, vibrant, and hot that comes with startups, right? I'm not saying that large companies cannot do those breakthrough innovation type of products and outcomes, drive products and outcomes. But mostly speaking, we see more attraction on the lower end of the spectrum. In other words, startups that truly are thinking different. Okay. On the other hand, of course, I would hate to make a direct plug. What I see with Microsoft is pretty exciting because of how, again, they partner. So if why I think Microsoft is succeeding better in manufacturing is they don't really create the solutions themselves. They really enabled their partners to go create those solutions. I remember back when we were in Wipro and you were involved and you and I were involved in some of the joint solutions we did for large Fortune 500 customers. So I think partnership in terms of how we can bring multiple companies together is critical. So to answer your question, Zia, for a startup, I think they're really nimble in terms of being able to demonstrate value. But by the same token, they're not in the right spot to then scale that solution across a large company like Stanley Black & Decker. So what I have found out that works really well is this possible? How can you combine a startup with a large company, right? So whether it is a Rockwell or whether it is a Schneider or something like that could work. So I think to answer your question, being able to be nimble, being able to actually demonstrate the solution and being flexible. And third, most important, passion for what you're selling, passion for the solution, address this problem that the solution is addressing is really important. You see what I'm saying? Otherwise, it just becomes a sale. So most times when we, if I were to go back and reflect on some of the decision, the yes decisions we have made with companies, it is because either it's a salesperson or it's a solutioning consultant or it's a founder that is so passionate about not just driving business and making that next important sale, but it's also about saying, how can we really solve this problem and get that satisfaction when it really works, right? I cannot tell you how important that is. And then, of course, the rest of the parameters come into play, be it cost, scalability, longevity, and all that stuff. But at the tip of that spear is where passion and the ability to be candid about what works, what not, what does not is super critical.
That's great advice, Sudhi. I think that's the point that you just said is probably the meat of this whole podcast, right? And hopefully the listeners were able to get from that. So what you're also saying is that the current partners that you're working with and what you have seen work for you is there's this collaboration between the large partners and the startup community coming together to make your vision possible, right? To make those investments and all of those things to work really well together.
Yeah, exactly. And being able to get your feet wet, like to say, and really help in proving out the solution. And then most important, I'll tell you this, be a little more patient in terms of getting that yes for that sale. Especially for startups, it's really critical you get that first sale. But unfortunately, until you prove certain things out, you can't get a yes from the client, right? So it's a delicate dance, one that is hard, I bet, for the entrepreneur. But that's really is how, you know, if I were to reflect back, that's how some of the startups who have worked with our program at Stanley Black & Decker have really succeeded and went on to become, you know, solid players in the industry.
And how are you able to reach out to this? How are you finding these startups, Sudhi?
Well, I tell you what, it's interesting how that works. On one hand, if you're passionate about the space, you will find them, right? Whether you're reading or whether you're in, you know, in webinars or in at the time when we could travel in some of the, you know, events, commercial events, et cetera, exhibitions and so on. But by the same token, once you have the thought leadership, they find you, right? So it one leads the other. So in our case, we also have our brand helping immensely. Stanley Black & Decker, the kind of leadership our leadership brings, starting with Jim Lurie, our CEO, and Don Allen is so well known. It's a well-traveled story that they're both so passionate about the industry, manufacturing as second, and then of course Stanley Black & Decker. But it's not just the bottom line of Stanley Black & Decker, but it's also about the industry and the larger community. And that's the reason why a lot of partners find us, in addition to the other aspect that I mentioned. So it works beautifully.
Yeah, and of course, Stanley Black & Decker is more or less the guiding light for the rest of the manufacturing industry, especially around smart manufacturing, digital manufacturing, and where the overall manufacturing is heading towards, right?
We think so. If not the best, we are certainly among the top quartile of companies that's known for being candid, investing for a cause, and then making sure that we drive impacts with the investments we make that are significantly impressive, right? So all three.
So Sudhi, going back to some of your experiences of working with enterprise sales team, if there is any experiences that you can share with us which were not so great, which actually led you to probably drop the vendor, not selecting it, but something that stands out both now and in your prior experience, if you could share that would be really useful.
You know, I tell you, those experiences typically happen when you have a good, strong brand, okay, that people know, and in this case, me knowing about that brand. And so we've had scenarios where we've engaged with those brands and those companies. And what have found out to be is maybe it is the leadership of the group that we engaged, et cetera, that they don't really align to the brand promise and value. So my experience has been maybe it's that leader who's either too hungry for the sale or does not get the big picture. And here's the the thing that really gets me going. You start getting into a partnership discussion, and the partnership is all about a sale, which is just a one-way story, then where is the partnership, right? So when I see that, that's when I lose my interest very quickly. So in other words, if you're talking partnership, as the name suggests, it has to be a two-way street. A partnership cannot happen with one person taking 80% of the risk and the other person just taking 20. It just doesn't work that way. So if you come in and say, hey, I truly want to partner throughout a solution, then think before you make that statement. And when you make that statement, you know, stick with that posture all the way until it's done, that the whole exercise of proving something. On the other hand, if you don't have the time and or the investment, then just be candid and say, hey, you know what? This is, unfortunately, I don't have the wherewithal and or the resources or whatever the case may be to not go through a partnership approach. So if there's one thing that really breaks trust very quickly is you come under the pretext of partnership and doing something larger, but it ends up being all about a sale, then you really lose, you know, mind share of not just me. In a lot of cases, it's my teams, because they see through that, right? And so that's when you, then the word spreads very quickly. And I'll tell you, on the flip side, you didn't ask that question, Zia, but there's some companies that they're so passionate, sometimes even with all the right things they've done with partnership, they may not get the sale. But boy, unfortunately, I don't want to name names because that would not be fair for this podcast. But there are some companies that are incredible, big, powerful brands. They have not gotten a sale from me, at least in the space that I operate in SBD. But they continue to be the same. They're still eager. They're in it for the long haul. But trust me, I will make sure that they will get a sale, right? Because I see the power of the passion, the power of the solution. So that's sort of the converse of the question that you asked. So hopefully I answered what you're getting at with that question.
That's fantastic. And in that situation, right, you said sales leader. So were you referring to the actual person on the ground or the leadership, more like an executive sponsorship? And I'm sure all of them need to be aligned. But in your experience, what was it like?
It's mostly the leadership, right? Because I try to empathize with the salesperson more than the leadership, because the leadership sets the tone, and for the most part, right? So the decisions I made that didn't favor that vendor slash company was really driven more by the leadership as opposed to just that salesperson who was trying to make the sale.
On similar lines, is it possible for you to share experiences where you have selected someone, a vendor to work with, vendor partner to work with, but may not have started with that thing in mind, right? But things changed while you were interacting with them. They did something really nice, really well, that you were impressed with them. Any experience like that, Sudhi, that you can share?
So in other words, a pleasant surprise?
There you go, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking through that. And actually, I can think of a scenario or two where that's happened. Yeah, where it's more of a service situation, where they have been very tactical. In fact, then I think about it, again, not to stereotype regions and geographies, but there's certain parts of Europe where when they say no, they mean no, and they're very rigid. You probably can guess the regions of Europe that are such like that. So we actually partner with a company like that. And they're pretty rigid about cost. They're pretty rigid about, you know, their posture, very not very flexible, but we partnered with them because they deliver what they say they'll deliver. So over the last 2-3 years, I've seen them to become so much more flexible with the way they deal with us. I think the reason why they're flexible is because not that the company stance has changed, it's in their sort of culture, but I think our culture is rubbing off on them, whether it is the leadership of the person who runs the North American entity or the folks that actually work with my team to do the hands-on stuff. They've started to become a lot more flexible. And certainly now they're doing things that is not so rigid anymore. So that's one example. I think it is sometimes culture sometimes culture rubs off in a good way between companies, between clients and vendors and partners. Yeah.
And that's definitely a pleasant experience, right?
Yeah. And now we have not only a company that not only delivers its promises, but it's a little more flexible, and we like it because life is not rigid always, right? So flexibility is always welcome. And some companies are awesome at being flexible. That goes a long way.
These are really good points, Sudhi. What are your expectations from your, whenever you have an existing partner, usually what are your expectations?
Well, I think, you know, that question can be parsed into stages, if you will, typical sales stages, the life cycle. So my expectation of a client partner or an account manager, if you will, is, you know, let's start with that. Then we can go through the stages until you close the deal and beyond, right? So I think the first important thing is the person should respect, the salesperson / account manager should respect the client's position, right? In other words, you can be pushy, you can be badgering. You need to quickly make a call. Hey, will this take 3 months or will it take 5 months? And then use your experience and intuition to then say, all right, I'm in it. I'm going to be in it for 3 months. And then after that, stick to that and don't crowd the client, because crowding is the worst thing that can happen. Second, be straightforward. These are all 101s, right? So if I were to, nothing profound about some of the things I'm saying. The other thing is just be straightforward and candid, saying this is exactly what I'm trying to do. I need to make a sale, not in so many words, but these are the steps that I'm going through. And the third thing is don't just introduce your team and let the solution consultants take on. Show that you really care about what we're trying to solve, in our case, Stanley Black & Decker's problems or opportunities. So, in fact, I can vividly recall a situation where this lady probably has 7 years of experience. I would not say aggressive, but boy, she was energized, motivated in terms of bringing the team. She brought the team, but guess what? She ran the meetings. She knew what problems we were solving. She understood what her solution consultants were providing. So engaged and so, you know, in the moment all through the meeting. And it's incredible when you go through a meeting like that, you know that this person, again, goes back to my passion piece. It's not about the sale, it's the journey, right? It's the journey. When you do win in a scenario like that, you relish the journey even more. So I think that's the distinction. I think salespeople, unfortunately, because of pressures fail to make, you know, there's fun in the journey. And you should be confident that the sale will happen for the right reasons, by the way, right? So anyway, coming back to your question. So, for example, this person, you know, was this very clear. We had a great meeting. And then, of course, the person wanted to get a commitment for a year subscription of their platform. And unfortunately, I was busy and so on. But then she sent a very direct note to the person who was working within my team. And I immediately engaged with this person in my team, and I made sure that we fast-tracked the yes for her, right? So that's the kind of impression it leaves, at least in my mind, for somebody who is committed to the process, committed to the cause, than just making a sale.
That's such a great point, Sudhi, about there is fun in the journey, right? You should probably share this name with me offline. You know, I would love to have her.
I will.
Sometime.
Yeah, I will. Oh, she would be fantastic. She's articulate. Needless to say, those people like that, there's something that drives them, right? And she's superb. Absolutely.
Thanks for that. I know you were saying what you're getting that bunch of cold emails and all that. Do you still entertain, this cold reach outs, Sudhi?
Unfortunately, it does not. But I tell you, this is a topic that vexes me. And a lot of my colleagues, you know, our CIO is my colleague. So she and I were talking about it. And what blows our minds are, these are all, obviously, when you're a salesperson in a startup or if you're a salesperson in a large corporation, it's not like you don't have basic common sense and you don't have, you know, a sound education or something like that. These people are all highly qualified. And yet they send these long 1.5 page emails with the opening line saying, oh, we know you're really busy. And then you expect them to expect the client, I mean, the potential sales leader, you know, the person who's going to get you the sale to read through that. And, you know, that to me is preposterous in this day and age, is who's going to go read through all of this? Literally, we get hundreds of emails, maybe 400, 500 mails that is not picked up by spam filters that hits our mailboxes. It's just so sometimes I feel like I do this, by the way, in one of those, if suddenly I out of sheer frustration and hope, I actually pick up an email and send a note saying, this is how my day is. How in the world would you expect someone like me to engage on this email? This really does not work. Here are some suggestions where you may be able to do something different to get the attention of the right person. Because I feel such an amount of wasted time that goes into this spam, and you leave such a poor impression of yourself and the brand you represent. I cannot imagine someone from our company doing that, right? Because we really relish the brand, and it's whether it's not just standing Black & Decker. Well, I was at Wipro, it's the same thing. I'm proud of the companies I work for. The brand is important. You got to protect your brand. You can't let it, you know, of course, the same goes with your own personal brand, right? So this is an important topic. I'm so glad, Zia, of why you've chosen this topic. I think you'll serve the industry really well when you have more people like me and others who have differing opinions than mine to help the sales community. I think it's a worthwhile cause.
As you know, Sudhi, right, sales job, especially on the field sales, it's a tough job, right? And
yeah.
they get so many no's before they get any yes.
Well, who better to speak than, I think the audience, if they don't know Zia, I want to take this opportunity to just, at least for my own, sake of refreshing my mind, the stuff that you did at Wipro, doing some of the cold calling and of course other regular sales calls, is just impressive. When you are able to cold call and land one of the largest deals in the history of Wipro's manufacturing, industry sector, I mean, you can probably write a book on that, Zia. Right? It started with class. It started with, respect to the client. And the client you sold to is a marquee brand in North America, right? So you did all the right things. Now, when I reflect back on some of my responses, think about all the things you did. You did it by the book, and you did it with patience, and you landed the deal. So pretty amazing.
Thank you for that, Sudhi. I greatly appreciate that. It was a great time. So thanks for that.
It was not easy at those days to land a $250-300 million deal, right? So now it's probably worth half a billion dollars. So that's nothing to scoff at.
Yes. And what I like the fact is, like you were saying, right? I mean, you and I, we are still very good friends with them, right? I mean, in spite of
small exactly.
Us, yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? We do business with them. That's another thing, Zia. Companies do business with other brands that they align with. So in that example, there was a very close brand alignment and cultural alignment between Wipro and this company, right? And it still has stuck. They've continued to do good business. Same with the company I work for proudly. You know, we hold our culture with high esteem. We love it. So we love to do business with other brands that mimic that, or not mimic, sorry, align with that culture and believe in it.
Oh, that's such a great point, Sudhi. Yeah, you're right. I mean, unless you're culturally aligned, there is no way the partnership going to happen, right? That's such a great point.
And, you cannot just put it on a PowerPoint slide, because one of the things I've seen is you say, hey, here's a slide that says your culture is this, my culture is this, so therefore we see alignment. That's not how you show alignment. You show alignment with your actions, right? You don't put it on a PowerPoint slide. In fact, you demean that whole message by putting it on a PowerPoint slide.
Wow, that's a good point. Yeah. So you're right. Culture is
is how you present yourself, how you act on things, especially when no one is looking.
That's right. Exactly. And, you know, think about this, Zia. You would have joined the company because you obviously loved something or that company you're working for. So in other words, there was an affinity that, you know, attracted you to join the company. So it's, again, it goes back to your own culture and your own brand. If you want to protect that and grow, you got to be congruent with that philosophy, right? So you cannot just let a sales undermine all of that. So it starts with you. You join a company who you respect, and so your brands are aligned. And then when you want to make a sale to a company, that the same philosophy should apply to the company that you're selling to. When you do that, there's music that can be made, right, with that story.
So these going on the same line, I think this is a great opportunity. What is your advice to the sales leaders out there, right? People who run these enterprise sales organizations. What do you advise them?
I don't know, Zia. That's a tough question. I don't have an answer for that because obviously they're leaders because they have done something, you know, notable and hopefully consistently to become leaders. So I think the one thing that, again, I have not been in sales. I've always supported sales. I've got a nice vantage point of what it takes for people like you, Zia, who did sales with intense pressure and quotas and so on. So the only thing that I can say is, it takes patience and it takes confidence in yourself, because when you do get to that breaking point, when you want to lose that connection to your own brand and the belief system that you have, something holds you back, right? And hopefully you'll be able to invoke that little voice that says, no, I'm not going to compromise my foundational beliefs to either violate a trust or just to become a, for lack of a better word, a classic salesperson who just goes for the deal. It's just a deal for the sake of a deal, right? And when you do that, most times you get a no, because unfortunately that never worked. On the other hand, the example I gave you, it works because this lady was clear. She did her job and she said, "Hey, look, I need an answer now." And when you've done all the good homework, right, then you can literally almost demand an answer, even though she didn't demand that. She was very courteous. But it was quite clear, you know, she wanted an answer.
Great, great. I'm eagerly looking forward to talk to this lady. Great.
Yeah.
Anything that we have missed covering today, especially you feel that is relevant for enterprise sellers, anything else you would like to add?
No, the only thing that I can add is there's a lot of things that you read in books and motivational, you know, speeches, etc. But there's nothing that equates the fact that you really need to know the business you're selling to. And you should appreciate, respect the company that you're selling to because of that. And when you understand what they're trying to do, and if you can go through all of some of the processes I mentioned, by bringing you the team that can truly help you articulate in a tangible way, right? That's most important. Showing is the best thing. Showing is much better than talking about it. So anything and everything you can do to show is a beautiful thing. It really creates a whole new impression. Talking less, of course, is awesome. So if you can do that and show and preparedness, again, it all is 101. Yeah, I'm not saying anything profound, right? But it just works so nicely when it all comes together.
Awesome. You know, coming to the last segment, I have a couple of questions more. You don't have much of a bandwidth, right? You're a busy guy. How do you keep yourself up to date with what's happening out there, and in a way do you want to be? How do you keep yourself up to date? Any newsletters, blogs, stuff like that?
Not really. You know, I wish I had the discipline like a lot of my colleagues and some of my leaders in my company does. I don't have the discipline, unfortunately. But I tell you, somehow it works for me. That every 6 months or 8 months when I would travel insanely, and now with COVID, you have your own different set of tensions with this pandemic. So I somehow find time, you know, where I sleep less than normal, which is very, you know, little. And I just get up at 5 or 4:30 or something like that. And I get into that rhythm for about a week or two. And I pick up on something, you know, I'm not seeking it. I just land into some topics that are truly interesting and relevant to my space. And then it just drives a whole new level of energy for me. And then now with this job that I'm in, which is in a really cool job, there's a lot of access to people who come, both firms, you know, well-respected firms and thought leaders who come and share what they're doing. So that's an added boon, if you will, in my job. So you get to listen to some awesome experts that come to us to talk about what they're doing. So that's been a great plus with my current role. So to answer your question, ad hoc learning by accident, and I try to do that at least once a year. I go into maybe a month of that intense learning session. And then in this role, as I said, you know, I get to have companies talk to us. And I'm also fairly active with a lot of these things I'm doing, you know, as a speaker, et cetera. So you get to rub shoulders with some really cool people and accomplished people.
Very nice. Very nice. And then also when you say people, the companies that you're interacting with, you're referring to the startups and all that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the last question is something that I ask almost every guest, just to understand, if you're hiring anyone for your team currently, so if someone who's listening is interested, or if they can refer someone, would love to know if you're hiring someone and how do they reach out? Yeah.
Oh, that's a great question. Yes, we absolutely are hiring. We're looking. We do two kinds of hiring, okay? One where we have an absolute need, and then we also do what's called a strategic hires, because we believe that this role is critical, so we do some strategic hires. So the answer is we are hiring for tactical roles, especially solution architects and solution consultants, building some of the solutions we're building, and also people who can really manage programs. Awesome program managers, project managers, and then anybody and everybody who's got a passion around driving data-led value in manufacturing that can take on many forms, whether it's application engineering or being an awesome data scientist or a terrific walk-on-water programmer, whatever the case may be. So yeah, we are hiring for all of those types of positions, yeah.
Hands down, this is the best interview so far, and it's a lot of great points. Thanks for that. So they greatly appreciate that.
No worries at all. Enjoy doing the interview, and always love chatting with you, Zia, and catching up. So thanks for doing the topic itself. I think it's really important. You're serving the larger community.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please do subscribe to the podcast, and I will greatly appreciate if you can leave a review. If you have any suggestions for future guests or any feedback, please write to me at zia@sellingtoenterprises.com. See you on the next episode. Thank you.